Traditions. What are they anyway? An easy way to describe a tradition is it is a pattern. It's a custom, a way of doing things, a practice. It's something that's passed down through generations. Traditions are sometimes inherited. We may learn them from older relatives. And yes, sometimes we make our own traditions. I recall that when I was a child, we all received new pajamas on Christmas Eve, and we wore them to bed so on Christmas morning we could all enter the living room to see what Santa brought. We were like little stair steps, with my youngest brother leading and ending with my older sister. And we, of course, do have that documented on Super 8 films and later on VHS video. When my older sister was about 9 or 10, she came home from church with the Christmas Eve program. She'd made that program that included some songs and Bible readings about the story of Jesus' birth. As the years went by, these programs happened every single year at our house on Christmas Eve. Jane would play the piano, I would be the MC. The other people in the family, sometimes my grandmother, sometimes brother, would read portions of the program. We enjoyed snacks of Christmas cookies and punch and other goodies after the program. And over the years, that program and the food got more elaborate. I do recognize that these are kind of Andy Griffith Show version Christmas traditions. Some traditions that are passed down in families at this time of year are not so positive, something important for us all to remember at this time of year. Some people are hurting or feel negative emotions about these holidays, or maybe just feeling nothing much at all about them. The title of this talk is Random Traditions. It's totally the case that my idea of a random tradition could be your very revered and significant tradition. We can definitely celebrate different ways and celebrate holidays at this time of year, many different holidays at this time of year. Some people like this time of year so much they celebrate all of the holidays. Some people like to talk about made-up holidays as those they don't celebrate. Well, they're really kind of all made up in a way, aren't they? Whether we think the stories around the holidays are fact or allegory or just story, the way we celebrate them is certainly made up. It's a tradition that we develop. Whether we're talking about Kwanzaa, Christmas, Hanukkah, Yule, Human Light, or maybe even Yuyu's Chalukah, people who celebrate these holidays have created traditions over the years in how they are celebrated. Here are a few random activities in our history that have become traditions related to celebrating Christmas in the United States. The first eggnog was made in the United States and was consumed in Captain John Smith's 1607 Jamestown settlement. From 1659 to 1681, the celebration of Christmas was outlawed in Boston, and lawbreakers were fined for celebrating. Poinsettia plants are named after Joel R. Poinsett, an American minister to Mexico. He brought the red and green plant from Mexico to America in 1828. Christmas was declared a federal holiday in the United States in 1870. Construction workers started the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree tradition in 1931. Rudolph, the most famous reindeer of all, was the product of Robert L. May's imagination in 1939. The copywriter wrote a poem about the reindeer to help lure customers to the Montgomery Ward department store. All those years ago, these traditions started. And we still drink eggnog, buy poinsettias, get off work on Christmas Day, wait for the Rockefeller Center tree to be lit up, and watch that movie Reindeer or read the poem. Some traditions will stick for a long time, and they just become part of the season. Now, here is a really random holiday that people actually celebrate at this time of year. Some people have made this a holiday tradition. What is it? Festivus. Okay. Festivus was introduced to the world in a Seinfeld episode in 1997. During that episode, George Costanza received a holiday card from his father. Elaine read the card and asked George to explain. And Seinfeld explained, "When George was growing up, his father Frank hated all commercial and religious aspects of Christmas. So instead, Frank made up his own kind of celebration that instead of putting up and decorating a Christmas tree with different colored twinkle lights and tinsel, he set up a bare maypole in the center of his living room. And rather than go around the room sharing all the things you're grateful for, dinner conversation would be comprised of an airing of grievances. Yes, you gather your family around the dinner table, you tell them all the ways they've disappointed you in the last year. And finally, to end the festivities, there is a feats of strength activity, which is basically just a living room wrestling match. The host picks their opponent. The holiday comes to a close when someone gets pinned. Now, today, December 23rd, is Festivus. So, happy Festivus, everyone, but no sharing of grievances during second hour. This is actually the 21st anniversary celebration of a holiday from a sitcom, and that's a bit unusual and random, except that, here's some information you may not know, one of the Seinfeld writers had a father who actually made up this holiday, and he really observed it. There was no wrestling, but the family did have a bear pole in the living room, and they did do airing of grievances. So, random, but true. We tend to think that how we celebrate here in this country is the standard or sort of accepted way to celebrate, but many of our winter celebrations have different traditions in other countries. Here are some examples. Christmas isn't really celebrated in Japan, but it is a tradition on December 25th for people to buy Kentucky Fried Chicken for dinner. Now, this began in 1974 when KFC advertised Christmas meals for visiting Americans. And the meal became so popular that people now place their orders as much as 2 months in advance. From December 12th to the 23rd, Icelandic kids leave a shoe on their windowsill. While they sleep each night, 13 magical Yule lads climb down from the mountains to leave gifts in the shoes of well-behaved children. The naughty kids wind up with a potato instead. Christmas trees in the Ukraine are often covered in spider webs. An ancient legend tells of a poor family who grew a Christmas tree from a pine cone. The children, so thrilled by the idea of their very own tree, they spent months dreaming of the ways to decorate it for the holiday. But the family was penniless, so the children's tree would remain undecorated. Upon waking, the children discovered that spiders had spun webs of glistening silk around the tree's branches. Each thread magically turned into silver and gold as the morning sun danced upon the tree boughs. Today, Ukrainians dress up their trees with spider webs to welcome good luck into the coming year. In Italy, a witch controls the gift-giving, not Santa Claus. Parents must leave out a plate of broccoli with spiced cabbage or some similar traditional meal, and they will also leave some wine for the good witch. She leaves treats on January 6th. St. Lucia Day is a traditional celebration in Sweden that falls near the winter solstice. It begins with a parade of children in white full-length gowns, holding candles and singing songs together. One child from each village or town is chosen to be Lucia, and a national Lucia is also chosen. The winner wears a crown made out of a wreath and decorated with candles. The arrival of winter is celebrated in China and in East Asia, and it marks the transition between days getting shorter and days getting longer. Families gather and eat rice balls and dumplings, foods that nourish the body for the upcoming season. And Jews in Morocco celebrate Hanukkah by lighting candles, but they also celebrate by enjoying fried jelly donuts. Their version is made with the juice and zest of an orange. So let's talk a little bit more about Christmas celebrations, since that's the holiday that we hear most about. There are so many stories about traditions. Many of them are very random, and there are also conflicting stories about these traditions as well. Here are some examples. Do the candy cane colors of red and white represent the purity in the body of Jesus? I've heard that, but there's no evidence that's true. These hard candy confections have been made for years. There's a legend that a person in 17th century Germany first made the candy in a crook to represent the shepherd's staff, but well, there's no evidence of that. The crook likely came about so it could be easily hung on a tree. The red and white stripes are a more modern invention, but nobody knows when that happened. So it's a random holiday tradition to have red and white crooked candy canes at Christmas. Have you ever heard of the Christmas pickle? It's not just a shiny ornament, but it actually represents a beloved tradition in many American households. A glass pickle ornament is hidden within the branches of a Christmas tree. Then the first child to find the pickle Christmas morning gets a special treat, or maybe they get to open their gifts first. This is said to be a German tradition, but no. A survey of Germans showed that only 8% of Germans had even ever heard of this tradition. So there's another sort of random holiday tradition. Now, let's talk Elf on a Shelf for a minute. This elf is sent from the North Pole to encourage kids to behave themselves. The idea is that the elf watches night and day and reports to Santa. And of course, the elf moves around the house while the kids are asleep and maybe does all kinds of crazy things like play poker, take selfies, maybe sunbathe on the kitchen counter. All these kind of things get recorded on social media, and so that's kind of how we know. This tradition happened in 2005 when a children's book was published about the elf on a shelf. Now there's an animated movie, and the elf is a regular at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. This is another random tradition, and it's just related to a book that caught the imagination of parents. Anyone recall that red, white, and green Jell-O salad at Christmas? The white layer has lemon Jell-O, crushed pineapple, marshmallows, cream cheese, and Miracle Whip salad dressing. Yum? Jell-O was first popular in the early 1900s. The James Beard cookbook, published in 1972, caused demand to increase dramatically for, as they were called, congealed salads. The Christmas salad was popular as early as 1958. Maybe the recipe was in McCall's, or maybe it was in Ladies' Home Journal. There's really no evidence whose fault or whose concoction that it was. So yeah, this is kind of random. As far back as 1823, when Clement Clark Moore, or was it Henry Livingston Jr., wrote A Visit from St. Nicholas, stockings were hung near the fireplace, awaiting a visit from Santa. At the end of the poem, St. Nick filled the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying a finger aside of his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. While there's no known record of the Christmas stocking origins, in many folk tales, the stocking is linked to the idea of St. Nicholas as a gift giver. It's believed, however, that gifts were placed in stockings and footwear back as far as the 1100s. None spread the notion of a magical night visitor who comes and leaves gifts for children, explained Gary Bowler, a professor of history at the University of Manitoba. He said kids were encouraged to leave out their shoes and have little gifts put in them. So the shoe actually preceded the stocking. The footwear could be filled with treats if the child was good. But if the child was deemed naughty, they might find coal or sticks or even manure. Not a very Merry Christmas. The tradition of leaving a shoe to be filled with gifts is thought to predate Christianity. Its possible roots lie in Norse mythology. In parts of Northern Europe and Scandinavia, it's believed that during winter solstice, children would place a boot or clog filled with carrots, sugar, and straw at the hearth for the North god Odin's flying horse. The shoe would be filled with gifts and candy as a reward for their kindness. The tradition was then adopted for St. Nicholas Day, where the shoes would be left out in the days leading up to December 6th, and sometimes filled with carrots for Santa Claus and his horse. The progression from shoe to stocking is really not quite clear. And in fact, the most popular myth explaining the origin of Christmas stocking tradition has nothing to do with shoes or flying horses after all. The tale goes this way. Once there was a poor widower with three daughters. The widower was fearful that without a dowry, his daughters would be unable to marry and possibly end up penniless. St. Nicholas, the former monk, was roaming the village when he learned of the family's unfortunate situation. He knew the widower to be too proud to accept charity, so St. Nick dropped gold coins down the chimney, which happened to land in the daughter's stockings, which had been drying by the fire. Another random tradition. If you're going to watch five Yule log videos this holiday, watch these. Now, that is the title of an article that I found on the internet. So, yeah, watching a fire on TV or on a video or on your computer during Christmas is a random holiday tradition. This actually started in 1966 when a New York City TV station played a burning fire for 3 hours on Christmas Eve. And this three-hour video ran for 33 consecutive years. Over the years, the tape version of the Yule log has taken on a life all its own. Besides fireplace videos on YouTube, Netflix, phone apps, the Yule log now has a strong social media presence. Yes, this is a strange way to experience the warmth of the holiday season and another random holiday tradition. And the Santa Claus that we all know and love, that big jolly man with the red suit and the white beard, he didn't always look that way. In fact, many people are surprised that prior to 1931, Santa was depicted as everything from a tall, gaunt man to a spooky-looking elf. He was donned in a bishop's robe and a Norse huntsman animal skin. In fact, when Civil War cartoonist Thomas Nast drew Santa Claus for Harper's Weekly in 1862, he was a small elf-like figure who supported the Union. Nast continued to draw Santa for 30 years, changing the color of his coat from tan to the red he's known for today. What helped to cement our current view of Santa is advertising, of course. In the 1930s, Coca-Cola advertisements that featured paintings of Santa as we know him now, old, plump, jolly, red-faced, and white-haired, with the red outfit. This depiction of Santa didn't really exist in collective cultural consciousness before the soda company's advertisements. Yeah, a bit of random tradition, since Coke evidently told us how Santa really looks. How hard would it be to imagine a Christmas without the red and green colors? The common assumption is that the colors relate to solstice celebrations and the holiday tree and berries, and that probably is the case, but there's more to the story for why we see so much red and green at Christmas time. Here's the rest of the story. It actually took centuries for the link between Christmas and the colors red and green to become as solid as they are today in American culture. That image from the Coca-Cola advertising proved enduring, the red colors of Santa's clothing alongside the green of a Christmas tree. Yes, the beauty of nature combined with the crassness of commercial commerce and an ancient Yule holiday created our red and green Christmas. We have a color tradition that is not so random, but it's a tradition for kind of a random reason. I'll stop there with the examples of random holidays and talk a bit about the value we can find in observing and celebrating our winter holidays. Just what is a Unitarian to do this time of year? So many holidays to consider. What do we do about these holidays? Do we embrace one and celebrate it? Do we celebrate none of them? Do we celebrate all of them? Our UU sources tell us that we can make meaning for ourselves out of these winter holiday stories. I certainly have direct experience this time of year, and I can find wisdom from the world's religions in these holidays. And there certainly is Jewish and Christian teachings and humanist teachings, and there are teachings of earth-centered traditions. The meaning that I make may be different from you, and that's okay. This year, I'm looking at the values promoted through the holidays, and I'm thinking about the importance of those values for my life and how I live every day. Think about how you might make meaning of winter holidays and what importance they may have for us. Let's begin with Kwanzaa. The holiday was created in 1966 as a way to bring African Americans together as a community to reconnect with their African roots and heritage. The celebration of Kwanzaa includes an acknowledgement and honoring of seven principles. Each day of Kwanzaa emphasizes a new principle, and the evening candlelight ceremony provides an opportunity to discuss the principle and its meaning. The principles are maintaining unity as a family, community, and race of people, self-determination, building and maintaining community and solving problems together, being entrepreneurial, building communities collectively, finding creative ways to leave communities of African descent in better function than before, and faith in God, family, and heritage. These principles of Kwanzaa are about the importance of building community and working together to build a better life for family, community, and the African American people. Hanukkah is the Jewish 8-day wintertime festival of lights that's celebrated with a menorah lighting and special prayers and foods. The Hebrew word Hanukkah means dedication, and the holiday celebrates the dedication of the Holy Temple. In the 2nd century BCE, the Holy Land was ruled by Syrian Greeks who tried to force the people of Israel to accept their culture and beliefs. Against all odds, a small band of faithful but poorly armed Jews led by Judah the Maccabee defeated one of the mightiest armies on earth, and he drove the Greeks from the land, reclaiming the Holy Temple in Jerusalem and rededicating it to the service of God. When they sought to light the temple's menorah, they found only a small amount of oil had escaped contamination by the Greeks. Miraculously, they lit the lamp, and the one-day supply of oil lasted for 8 days until new oil could be prepared. Hanukkah celebrates this miracle. To me, this holiday story is about perseverance and hope and faith. Yule is when the dark half of the year relinquishes to the light half. Starting the next morning at sunrise, the sun climbs a little higher and stays a little longer in the sky each day. Known as solstice night, or the longest night of the year, the sun's rebirth was celebrated with much joy. On this night, our ancestors celebrated the rebirth of the Oak King, the Sun King, the giver of life that warmed frozen earth. From this day forward, the days would become longer. Bonfires were lit in the fields, and crops and trees were toasted with drinking spiced cider. The ceremonial Yule log was the highlight of the festival. In accordance with tradition, the log must either have been harvested from the householder's land or given as a gift. It must never have been bought. Once dragged into the house and placed in the fireplace, it was decorated with seasonal greenery, doused with cider or ale, and dusted with flour before being set ablaze by a piece of last year's log that was kept for this purpose. The log would burn throughout the night and then smolder for 7 days before being ceremoniously put out. Ash is the traditional wood of the Yule log. Many customs, in addition to the Yule log, were created around Yule. They're also identified with Christmas today. Some of these Yule customs that are also Christmas customs include holly and red berries, mistletoe, wreaths, evergreen trees with ornaments, drinking wassail, exchanging presents, and caroling. To me, this holiday is about celebrating rebirth, new life, and showing respect for the cycle of nature. Human Light is a humanist holiday that's celebrated annually on December 23rd. Human Light was first celebrated in 2001 and was created to provide a specifically humanist celebration during the Western world's holiday season. The holiday is celebrated to remember the importance of reason, compassion, and hope. These are important values for us to reflect on and to include in our day-to-day lives. Carol Sue described the three values by lighting candles, and she described them this way. Reason guides our thinking. Compassion helps us work for a more kind and caring world. Hope keeps us thinking about the future and our ability to guide that future in a just and compassionate direction. Finally, Christmas. Christmas is an annual festival commemorating the birth of Jesus. It is observed as both a religious and cultural celebration. Christmas is preceded by the season of Advent, or the Nativity Fast, that initiates the season of Christmastide, which historically in the West lasts 12 days. The traditional Christmas narrative from the New Testament says that Jesus was born in Bethlehem in accordance with Old Testament principles. When Joseph and Mary arrived in the city, the inn had no room, so they were offered a stable where the Christ child was born, with angels proclaiming the news to shepherds, who then further disseminated the information. Let me read a portion of the story from the Gospel of Luke. This story, I think, is probably a part of my DNA. I was a Baptist, I think, pretty much the day I was born. I actually have a certificate signing me up for the nursery when I was 2 days old. Christmases during my childhood were always about the story and what it means. As adult, I still know the story by heart, and I appreciate the poetry of the King James Version of the story. Here goes. And she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same countries shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not. For behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And you shall see this sign unto you. You shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly hosts, praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. What's the meaning of Christmas for us? I think it's a reminder about love, and it's a wish for peace on earth. One of my traditions is to watch Hallmark movies with my mom. I'll probably see 10 or 12 when I go there next week. But several times we have watched a movie called The Christmas Box. An older woman, played by Maureen O'Hara, kept asking a man who lived at this woman's house as a caretaker, What is the meaning of Christmas? He was very annoyed, but he finally discovered through a series of experiences with the Christmas box that Christmas is really about love. Makes sense to me. And based on Luke, it's also about peace on earth and goodwill toward others. So we have quite a few great values that we can be celebrating this time of year, and values that we can work toward all year long. They include building community, perseverance, faith, appreciating the cycle of nature, reason, compassion, hope, goodwill toward others, peace on earth, and love. Actively celebrate the holidays or don't, your choice, but it's remembering that while all of these winter holiday stories do not resonate with us as our own personal stories, they can still provide some lessons for our lives. There's probably no other book that's contributed more to the spirit of Christmas in the way we celebrate it that's not a religious way is Charles Dickens' The Christmas Carol. A story was first published in London in 1843. The story, as you know, recounts a story of Ebenezer Scrooge, an elderly miser who's visited by the ghost of his former business partner, Jacob Marley, and the spirits of Christmas past, present, and future. After their visit, Scrooge is transformed into a kinder, gentler man. Listen to Scrooge's nephew answer Scrooge's "Bah humbug" comment about Christmas. Scrooge's nephew said, "But I am sure that I have always thought of Christmas time when it has come round as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time, the only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers in life and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that Christmas has done me good and will do me good, and I say, God bless it." Thank you.